Hit it.
All right, hands in the circle. Go team. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning into the Banff Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty. And with me today, I've got several of our usual contributors, starting off with Mr. Walt Rebillard. How you doing, Walt?
Very sore, but happy to be here.
So, do I want to ask?
Just tons of kung fu and trying to clean up my leg.
Oh, okay. Cool. Avenging your parents' death, or what?
Not yet. They're still alive, so, you know, if anybody wants to help me with that, we'll work it.
Ouch.
That was more funny and less awkward in my head. Sorry, guys. I have that problem in real life, too. It's not just podcasts. Hey, Jason Tonder, Dr. Comics is here.
Also sore, but not in any way as cool as Walt's story.
Why are you sore?
I was out late last night in Jacksonville at the Art Walk, and we walked our miles off. So that was a lot of fun. Went to the Modern Art Museum and listened to some big band music. It was a lot of fun last night.
Cool. And last but not least, we have Mr. Aid Smith. How are you doing, Aid?
Not too bad. Same as usual.
Okay. Well, today, our main topic of conversation is Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Last podcast, Aid and I were lucky enough to interview Mr. Dan Abnett. And so you should stop listening to this podcast. Go back and listen to that one because it was a lot of fun. Although Aid and Dan talked a lot about Doctor Who.
Which is never a bad thing, as I mentioned before.
No, everyone loves Doctor Who. I never got the bug. But, you know, not everybody has to. I understand it's a huge deal and everyone loves them. So.
I just found it interesting that they commented that there could possibly be a female Doctor Who at some point.
Yes.
I think there should be. Especially with the worldwide following. I mean, why is it always a white guy from the British Isles? Why can't George Lopez play the next Doctor Who? Or
now you're talking my language.
Okay, you're telling me that they would ever cast a non-British Doctor Who? That would cause an uproar in the BBC. You can't do that. That's crazy.
Well, it's like a non-British James Bond, I understand.
Exactly.
Okay, maybe Helen Mirren?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, can a black British guy be Doctor
Who? Oh, yeah, definitely.
All right.
Idris Elba was in the running before the last guy, in my opinion, so that would have been awesome, yeah.
That would have been great, actually, yeah. But can't have, say, Cheech Marin?
I don't know who that is.
And I feel old.
So there you go.
Let's be honest, Mike. Cheech and Chong were a long time ago.
Oh, yeah. That. Right.
I live in Colorado. It's always close to hand here. And let me tell you, since stuff was legalized, you can't get good pizza delivery. Anyway, hell, even the mail kind of sucks anymore. But anyway, I digress. All right, so hey, from Dr. Hey, before we forget to mention it, because I want to make sure I mention it, Aid was recently published by Green Onion Games. In fact, this week, the Mutants and Masterminds Atlas of Earth Prime and Northern Europe came out, and Mr. Aid Smith, along with Steve Kenson, are the authors on that project.
Correct. Yes, my first official Green Onion thing, which I'm very, very proud of.
Congratulations, Aid. I think that's awesome.
Thank you.
It is awesome, and you can pick it up now on RPG Now for $1.99, so go.
And, you know, I, for all of you that want to write for Green Ronin, I think that by the time this podcast comes out, the open call will still be open.
Yeah, we should put that link up. Green Ronin is looking for new writers.
They've got links up for every game they publish, including M&M, but also including Song of Ice and Fire and Dragon Age. And each of the editors have put up, like, help guides, sort of showing you what they need submitted. And they're really helpful, and you should... You aspiring writers out there should totally submit.
Yeah, we will put that. The RBG designer tryouts, they posted that on July 30th. So
yeah.
Just a scant week ago. So.
Good.
You were breaking up, Jason. What was that again?
Oh, I just said it was good through the end of this month.
Yeah. So definitely put the link in the show notes. So anyway, Aid has been published. Green Ronin's looking for new writers. And, all right, so... Jason, you've seen Guardians of the Galaxies, right?
I did. I did see it. I saw it with some good friends.
What'd you think?
You know, I liked it. I liked it a lot. The reason why I like it will probably resonate with people like you and Walt and all of the dudes of our generation. It really reminded me of those 80s sci-fi movies that weren't Star Trek and Star Wars. you know, there was a real strong Last Starfighter kind of vibe to this movie.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah, me too. And which, another movie that starts with an Earthling being abducted, right? And also there was a real strong Enemy Mine vibe to this movie.
Well, I forgot about that movie.
You remember when, like, in Enemy Mine, when the guy says, oh, yeah, you insulted Mickey Mouse, and he tells, like, this whole story to the alien about how Mickey Mouse is the most revered figure in human culture. And it's this kind of running gag through the movie. And the joke of it is that Lou Gossett Jr., who's playing the alien, treats Mickey Mouse like he's Jesus Christ. I mean, he's, like, really respectful. It's, oh, I am sorry I insulted Mickey Mouse and all that stuff. And all of that stuff about Kevin Bacon and Footloose in this movie was a total call out to that gag. And so there's a lot of like 80s sci-fi kind of homages in Guardians of the Galaxy. And I liked it. I liked it a lot for that. It was great to see a sci-fi movie that's not set on Earth and was, you know, kind of having fun with it. I liked it a lot.
Cool. Walt, what'd you think?
I'm gonna build on what Jason was talking about.
Yeah.
I think that not only did it celebrate the fact that it was a sci-fi movie not set on Earth, but it also didn't apologize for it. You know, the movie never really once apologized for the fact that this is a Guardians of the Galaxy movie. You know, and that people might not know who that is or what that is. You know, so I mean. You know, you see in so many of the superhero movies, especially not so much the ones now, because now they're becoming more mainstream. But in the movies, like when we first started seeing stuff like Batman Begins and, you know, some of the Spider-Man movies.
Or the first X-Men movie when Wolverine says, you want me to wear yellow spandex, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, you got all these movies that came out and said, you know, we want you to embrace superheroes, but don't worry, we won't ask you to embrace too much of it. You know, and this didn't really do that. And, you know, I'm sorry, that's my dog with a sweet toy. I think it's handled. The relationship that I thought was amazing in this movie was, Rocket and Groot. And not so much for the fact that, hey, this is a talking raccoon, but this is, and, you know, this is a big tree, you know, more for the fact of, once again, not apologizing for the fact that this is a talking raccoon and a big tree. My wife in the background's going, I am Groot. I actually saw the movie with my wife and she liked it as well. The relationship in that was amazing because, you know, you have this thing that, you know, this creature that feels like nobody understands me because there's nobody else like me. And, I was beaten and kicked and tortured. And, when I was at my lowest, here came this person, this thing that can sympathize with me.
Yeah.
And, you know, just the, what do you call it? The scene where, you know, at the end, if you haven't seen Guardians yet, please fast forward about 2 minutes.
Spoilers.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that scene at the end where, you know, Groot covers everybody and Rocket looks at him and says, you know, you can't do this. You're going to die. What am I going to do without you? You know, and, you know, there's that whole family vibe that goes on throughout, you know. I mean, that was amazing, you know, that, like, you could hear like side conversations in the theater throughout things going on, but
sure.
During those scenes, everybody was silent, you know, and it was kind of neat to see that. And then, of course, I geeked out at the end when, you know, you have newly repotted Groot, which is a throwback to some of the comics, and I started geeking out. I was like, yeah, that's fun. So I enjoyed the movie. I don't know that it was. For me, I don't know if it was more enjoyable than some of the other Marvel movies out,
yeah.
But I definitely enjoyed it for what it was, and I loved, like I said, building on what Jason said, I loved the fact that this was a Guardians of the Galaxy movie, and I was okay with that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I agree with you, by the way. I think that there's a real strong message in this movie about empathizing with the pain that other people have gone through. And kind of projecting and knowing that, you know, that person over there isn't anything like me, but we still have some kind of shared experience. You know, and that's a real strong message in this movie, and I think a really positive one. There's a lot to say in this movie about recognizing people who are alien to yourself and identifying with them rather than feeling like they are hostile others.
You know, and you see that a lot of times, like when you go to other countries and, you know, you're the alien.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when I would travel to other countries and try and learn a language or something like that, you know, you sit there and for a little while, you feel like you're the only one who knows what you're going through. And then, when we went to Iraq, and we were working with the Iraqi police, it was us on one side of the room and them on the other side of the room. And it was like, you know, that high school dance that nobody really wanted to mingle. And all it really took was, you know, one person to walk over and, you know, stumble through some really bad Arabic and say, you know, what is this food that you're serving us? And, you know, what does it taste like? And, you know, those kind of experiences, you find out that, yeah, you know, I might live in an apartment, you might live, you know, here or there, and, you know, these are my customs, these are your customs, but at the end of the day, we're still all people.
That's right. That's right. All right, Aid, hit us.
Well, I haven't seen it.
I won't see it.
I won't see it until possibly until it comes on DVD, maybe on demand TV. That's the soonest I'll see it.
All right.
I don't do Marvel movies. I just don't do them.
Oh.
Funny enough, ironically enough, the thing you're saying about it reminding you of 80s movies.
Yeah.
When they started putting the movie posters in the comics on about June, July time, immediately the first thing I thought of was, this looks like a very, very weird 80s movie. And yeah. I just think, because we didn't know how popular it was going to be, I was thinking, outside of like the comic people who actually know what this is anyone going to see that and think, wow, that's a film I want to see? Or everyone going to see that and thinking, what the hell is this B movie crap they've put on at the cinema now? I don't know. So I'm surprised it's taken off quite as well as it has.
Well, you have to understand that it has at its heart, like a lot of 1980s sci-fi sentimentality.
The soundtrack too, right?
Soundtrack's great.
But it is produced with a very 21st century high tech finish. I mean, this is a beautiful movie, Aid. You would get a lot out of it even if you didn't understand a single word that was being said, because it's a really visually interesting film. Thank you for reminding me about the music, because that's another part of my argument about how this is basically a homage to 80s sci-fi. Sorry that you don't watch any Marvel movies at all, Aid.
I've not seen a Marvel movie at the cinema ever. I've still not seen Thor 2.
You've seen them, you just don't see them in the theater.
Yeah, I can't literally wait until they've come on demand TV so I can spend like £3 on them, and then if they're rubbish, then I can just go, well, that was it. I literally only saw Iron Man 3 2 weeks ago.
Okay, all right.
What do you think?
It was all right.
All right, with all the bio you were building up, it's all right.
It was all right. Yeah. I could say things like, Iron Man 3, why is his armor all of a sudden exploding all over the place as soon as it hit? Surely the point of armor is to stay together, first thing. and the Mandarin, I didn't mind what they did with the Mandarin. I just think it's a shame that now they've used that character concept up and they didn't use all these rings and all this kind of stuff. It's just, it's kind of like a waste of opportunity. We've called this character the Mandarin, but we won't bring anything in there that was actually part of the Mandarin at all. Well, so it was quite a neat double bluff, but it would have been nice to at least have Guy Pearce's character have the power ring thingies he's got in the actual comic books. At least that would have been cool, you know.
So, Eight, you will be relieved to know that they actually are not done with that character yet.
Good.
That they have revealed in one of the shorts that there actually is a Mandarin out there that Guy Pearce's character based the fake Mandarin on.
Right, gotcha.
And that real Mandarin has now come and arrested kidnapped the actor who was
playing. Okay.
So they set it up, but we haven't seen him yet. We just know he exists.
Wait, which short was that in?
That was in Hail to the King, which was the an exclusive on one of the DVDs. I think it was on the Thor 2 DVD.
Oh, shit, that's why I haven't seen it. I haven't seen Thor 2 on DVD yet.
So, yeah. The actor, guy is in prison, and his lawyer shows up, and it turns out the lawyer is actually an agent for the real Mandarin who kidnaps him.
That actor would be Ben Kingsley.
Yeah, Ben Kingsley, yeah.
Otherwise known as Gandhi.
Exactly.
Yeah, what was the name?
That's cool.
I'm trying to remember the name of his character in the film, though.
Fair enough. Did you see the Agent Carter short, Aid?
No.
You saw Iron Man 3, you didn't watch the Agent Carter short?
No. It wasn't on demand option I had, so I've not seen it, no.
I liked Iron Man 3 well enough, although I could argue with the climax, because I understand he's destroying his armor, because that's his way of putting his life with Pepper ahead of his identity, and it's his way of not being ego-driven, and it was character development, I get that. Even though I'm not crazy about Iron Man blowing up his armor, I understand.
Yeah, but then by the end, he shows off with his armor. I thought that was the entire point. I thought at the end of it, it's got almost like the kind of like at the end of the Batman films, where he's kind of like retires from being Iron Man. It's like, yeah, okay. So you think, okay, he's off in the distance. He'll come back as in Avengers 2. And then at the end of it, he's got his armor back on. He's doing stuff. And I think, like, what? You just destroyed your army in that. What did you destroy? Why did you do it if you're going to still be Iron Man? It makes no sense.
It's a bit of a mixed message.
Yeah.
I think there might have been another way for them to make that emotional point without having him blow up his, you know, blow up his armor. But I like the Agent Carter short better than the previous 2-hour long movie I had just seen, and it was like, not saying Iron Man 3 wasn't an entertaining movie. I'm just saying I was really excited about the Agent Carter short.
Yeah, I cannot wait for the 8-episode Agent Carter series. I just hope that it gets played well and we get a whole series out of it.
Yeah, I think it'd be great if it did, you know, like a well-written period piece like Mad Men, but it's S.H.I.E.L.D.
Exactly. Oh, and all the characters and all the Marvel stuff that you could pull in, it'd be so much fun. Johnny Woo!
Yeah, again, TV-based stuff and movie stuff, all the stuff they could pull it in, it's like, yeah, that's the guy there, that's the supervillain, yeah, he's called that, he ain't got any powers, he wears a suit, yeah, they never do it, and it doesn't make sense, because the movie universe is like, if you go to the Guardians, you've got all these things flying around, and you've got these massive spaceships, like, why does that never really kind of seem to creep into other things? It seems to be they try to ground it in reality so much, almost like they're either afraid to either blow a budget on it or kind of make it too kind of gorgeous, and goes, that's just ridiculous. So now they've got, I mean, for Christ's sake, you can't get more ridiculous than a talking raccoon. So, I mean, now they've done that, anything should go in any kind of thing they do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And if they don't do that, if Agent Carter doesn't have, a supervillain, there's actually a supervillain, you know, a proper supervillain in it, that's obviously, that's the point of the Avengers forming, you know, that it, I don't know. It just seems like a wasted opportunity, a lot of the stuff.
Well, I mean, they had a S.H.I.E.L.D. in the 50s comic series about a year ago. Yeah. Howard Chaykin, I think, was on it.
Yes, yes.
It was a lot, the old Nick Fury, the white guy Nick Fury, oh boy, Kraven the Hunter, or possibly his dad. I want to say Captain Carter, Namor, and it was, you know, they weren't really fighting supervillains; they were fighting like Hydra in the '50s and you know, that kind of thing. But hey, I'm about to piss you off so much, but I think I'll have Walt do it. Hey, Walt.
Yes, sir.
Would you like to explain to Aid how the Nova Corps appears in this movie?
Oh goodness. Let's see. I'm just trying to figure out the distance from Aid throwing a digital punch from where he's sitting in England, and see if I can duck in time. So yeah, the Nova Corps.
Before you say this, I want to say, Aid, we had Dan Abnett on this very podcast about a week ago. You and I were talking to him, and I said to him, "All right, Dan, you are the high priest of making the Nova Corps cool again. And you okay with this movie?" And he said, yes, I am. Now, Walt, please proceed.
But you also did say that they're doing something different with it. So I can understand. I know it's going to go different, but so I can understand that completely.
So yeah, so the Nova Corps in the movie is portrayed as an intergalactic police force that basically stationed on Xandar, but it's just like normal dudes in spaceships with like you know how in the comics they have different levels of the Nova Corps.
Mm-hmm.
But you always have the Novas, who are, you know, like these big, powerful guys with the Nova Force and all that stuff. And then you have like support personnel. Well, there were no Novas; it was just the support personnel.
Let's be honest. It was like the Rebel Alliance or Starfleet.
Yes.
It was a bunch of guys in very, very cool, mind you, but a bunch of guys in starfighters.
Yep, pretty much. So, I mean, you know, I liked those characters, the guys who were representing the Nova Corps. I just thought they were, you know, just as characters, you know, especially I can't remember the actor's name, the guy with the curly hair.
John C. Reilly.
Yes. I liked what they did with him at the end. That was kind of neat.
With his family?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
He was actually Omar Day, I believe.
Oh, no kidding. That didn't come across to me. I don't know. Like they didn't really put those characters front and center, so it felt like they, you know, but I mean, they had moments where they were, you know, interesting and funny and whatnot, but that was the only thing in the movie that didn't really hit me with a lot of weight was the fact that at the end, these Nova Corpsmen had so much faith in these outlaws that they said, let them run with it. You know, I didn't get that connection, but I still thought like some of their moments were fun.
For what it's worth, in my own personal tabletop role-playing group, the most quoted line from that movie, other than "I am Groot," has become, well, I don't believe anybody's 100% dick. Right, which is
okay.
Nova Corps jokes, yeah.
So, okay, here's a quick. Sorry, go on, carry.
No, I'm done.
I was gonna say, okay, right. So I can understand that. I can understand how. Well, yeah. Okay, they've changed Novas. What a surprise. Okay. What about the Kree? Okay, do we see any more Kree apart from Ronan, or is that it? So do we have the big giant head thing that's actually floating in the bowl, or do we have? We do.
Almost no Kree other than Ronan himself, which is
no Suprema.
No, it's one of the big tragedies of the movie, really, is that we don't really see the Kree at all. Ronan is portrayed as a rogue Kree, and he's mostly assisted by Thanos and his own minions. So we don't really see Kree at all.
That's a shame.
Yeah. There's also that scene where they're talking to a the Nova Corps in the movie have a an alliance that they've just forged, kind of like a ceasefire almost.
Yeah, like a peace
with tree. With the Kree. And at one point, you know, the Nova Corps contact the Kree homeworld to say, hey, can you please stop this asshole from blowing up half the universe? And the Kree were very indifferent about it. It's like, he's a renegade, so it's not our problem. It very much reminded me of, at that point, like you had said earlier, it reminded me of an episode of, like, Star Trek. Yeah. Between like Earth and like the Romulans or some.
You know, my impression of that whole plot is that we can't do a Kree Skrull war because the Skrulls are part of the Fantastic Four license, and so we'll say that there was a Kree Xandar war instead.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And so that's kind of what I thought they were doing there, but I'm just speculating.
So this is funny, because talking about the Fantastic Four license with Fox, now, going back over the license, you would say that anything originated in the Fantastic Four can't be put into the movies, correct? This seems to be the general consensus that everyone thinks this is what it must include.
But apparently
the Celestials are in this, yeah?
We see Celestials in this movie, which was awesome, by the way.
Exactly. So they've slipped through the net somewhere along the line. So, and also they did earlier on in the week they had the Avengers Assemble cartoon, which, funny enough, had the Guardians in it at the time. And the first thing that happens is the Avengers come through, and Galactus is there on the actual trying to attack the New York City. So obviously there's somewhere along this kind of, apparently if it's in the FF you can't use it, there must be some kind of slips through the net. So the Skrulls possibly, yeah, but why some races have not and what some have? It's same as like the Black Panther originated in the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, but
it just seems really strange, and obviously he hasn't shown up yet, but everyone seems to assume he's going to show up in the Avengers. So
it really depends on how the contract is written.
It must be some really kind of tight holds over certain aspects of the stuff, but they can't just be, what I've read on the internet has literally been, well, if it's in the Fantastic Four first, it's not going to, well, that's not true. You've only got to look at the things that already exist on movies that it can't possibly be true.
Yeah, the Fantastic Four contract has got to have a specific list of named individuals that it
covers.
I don't know what that list is. I presume that it had the Inhumans on it, but I have been since corrected.
Yeah, exactly. So that's crazy as well. Yeah, that's right. It just seems really weird.
But the animated show, that's probably the loophole there, because we're talking about film rights, not animated rights.
Yeah, film rights and TV rights are separate. That's why someone else completely owns the rights for Battlestar Galactica in the movies. I think it's still Glenn Larson. And trying to make a just 4 years ago, he said, hey, people still love BSG, so let's do another Battlestar Galactica movie. And then some people said to him, maybe that's a bad idea because there was this hit TV show and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So that kind of got sidelined. I haven't watched the current Avengers cartoon. I don't know if it's any good. But the previous one, which I think everyone loves, as they rightly should, you had every goddamn person from the Marvel Universe.
Yeah. That's the shame. I mean, that is the shame of the thing. Like I said, you know, last podcast we did something about comics. It's a shame that Marvel's situation back then, when they had to negotiate these characters out to other companies, has caused this problem with, okay, we can't use Spider-Man this, we can't use Wolverine in that. It's a real shame that they can't do so. I mean, you know, if we could have Spidey join the Avengers, brilliant. Okay, fantastic. But, you know, make a good movie out of it, obviously, as well. But, you know.
Yeah, well, remember that one episode of The Last Avengers, Mighty Avengers, where you had, oh, God, the regular Avengers are killed by Kang. And so they innovate the new Avengers protocol, and you got like Iron Fist and Power Man and Wolverine, and Spider-Man fighting dinosaurs in the streets of New York, and
yeah, cool.
That was a lot of fun.
I guess I kind of see the silver lining in this, because I mean, I agree, it's a shame that we can't get a movie with the X-Men and Spider-Man and the Avengers all in it. But on the other hand, if the fact that we can't use the word mutant means that we have to go see the Inhumans instead, I consider that a win. When you're playing in the Marvel Universe, you have so many characters. There's just so much to play with. You're like, some editor tells you, oh, well, you know what? You can't use the X-Men because they're off in space right now or whatever. And I'm like, okay, I've got so much other stuff to play with. You know, I can live without the X-Men. So I guess I just think it's a great opportunity for us to pull in lesser-known characters and maybe give them some screen time.
I would love to see Black Bolt on film.
That would be cool, yeah.
Oh, Medusa. I've crushed on Medusa since I had her first comment.
So, I mean, there's a thing today. They were talking about Fox branching out the Spider-Man franchise. Obviously, they're talking about doing a Carnage movie and a Sinister Six movie. And what character will be, you know, the first character that, you know, branches out? Which first female character, even? And there's a lot of pictures of Jessica Drew and Black Cat. Jessica Drew, Spider-Woman, didn't actually originate in Spider-Man. She drew Marvel fanfare, because I looked it up this morning, because I thought, okay. And then she got around series 6-8 months later. So technically speaking, she should have nothing to do with the Spider-Man contract. She is now an Avengers character, so there's no reason she shouldn't be in another Avengers movie.
But she's in the Spider-Man contract.
Are you sure?
Yes. Yes. Any character with the name Spider in their name is in the Spider-Man contract.
How do you know this, Jason?
Well, okay, I don't have a copy contract, but
you would assume as much.
But I am quite confident. Yes, Spider-Woman is now an Avenger, but when Marvel sold these rights, she was just Spider-Woman. And
you bet Sony probably had a clause their lawyers put in there where, you know, Marvel's not going to release Spider-Woman a week after we release Spider-Man kind of thing.
Yeah, which is exactly what Stanley did in the first place.
There's a list of characters that the Spider-Man license covers, and I guarantee you that every incarnation of Spider-Woman, because there's been more than one, and every Spider-Girl is all covered by that, and as well as all of the NPCs, the supporting cast members. Now, I mean, you're right, it's silly, and we want to see her in Avengers, but... Some of us do. I wasn't a big reader of the Bendis Avengers, so I like Spider-Woman. She's a great character, but I don't personally. She's not part of my essential Avengers team to me. But I think it's great that Sony's going to make a female Spider movie, and if that's Jessica Drew, well then, you know, goalie on that.
Hey, Jason. While we're talking about movies, kind of vaguely in your neck of the woods, they have an open call for Ant-Man in Atlanta right now.
Yes, that's right. A friend of mine, a very, very talented student of mine who makes short films of his own, is applying to do camera work on that project.
Oh, they're looking for extras in the ad I'm seeing. Military types, scientists, guys that look like businessmen.
Well, I guess I should put on a suit and go audition, huh?
Well, you know, you could be an Ant-Man.
I could. On the other hand, Atlanta is like a six-hour drive from here, so I don't know. I may be happy being in the seats for this one.
But you could be an Ant-Man. Ant-Man.
I do love Ant-Man, and I have the original issues that this story is based on. The Scott Lang Ant-Man issues.
That was a fun book. I was sad when I got the guy who did Shaun of the Dead. I was sad when he got thrown off, but I think it'll be a decent movie.
Various cast members left as well, so I think they were a bit upset as well.
Yeah, well, it might still be okay. I mean, Marvel's going to make a bad movie someday. Well, did you guys see Iron Man 2? There we go. But I don't know. I still got hopes that this one is all right.
What did you think of Guardians, Mike?
Oh, you're going to make me confess my horrible secret. I haven't seen it.
I was gonna see
it this weekend, and I got pulled into. Remember, I canceled a podcast late last week because I had some work crisis.
Yes, sir.
It kind of went from minor work into like multiversal crossover crisis, and it was just Supergirl died. I had to hold her in my arms. It was bad, and I wound up working like 30 hours over the weekend and surviving on caffeine and junk food. And I didn't get to leave my chair for like a day and a half. So I didn't get to see it, unfortunately. So
you'll enjoy it. I hope so. It's a fun film, and it's got a lot of like the whole beginning sequence is a straight up Raiders of the Lost Ark call out. It's got a lot of homages to I mean they reference Footloose for Christ's sake. I mean it's a movie made for people of our generation. But at the same time it's also very fun, lots of action. I agree with you, Walt, by the way, I had not thought about this, but I should have realized that you would totally latch on to Rocket as like your reader identification character.
Oh, because he's a homicidal maniac?
Because he's short.
I don't know about that. What I know about the secret life of Walt Robillard, but he was a great character. And now that I think about it, it's just you know you would bond with him, and I agree. He was well done. He was well written.
You know the scene where there's a scene where his body becomes exposed.
Yes, and exactly what I'm thinking of. Yes, exactly.
And you see like all of these things, and I'm sitting there thinking. You know, and I'm just like, oh my God, I can feel the, you know, I kind of absently, I didn't really think about it. I started rubbing my shin, and I have a metal plate holding my shin together.
Yeah.
And I have two screws in that same knee and artificial tendons. And it's just like, I'm sitting there and I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, this poor little thing, you know, because I mean, yes, he was brilliantly voiced by Bradley Cooper, and yes, he was. You know, he was this like, you know, he was this plotting little ball of furry mayhem, and I loved it. You know, but at the same time, you know, here's this creature that, you know, when you think about it, you know, with everything that was done that he says that was done to him during the course of the story, yeah. You know, it probably just hurts to exist.
Yeah,
that's you right. know, but at the same time, you know, he still has that. Animal instinct to say, you know, and oh God, I can't remember the author. There's an author that has a great line from a poem that says, a bird, you know, no animal will feel sorry for itself. A bird will fall, still frozen from the bough of a tree and never regret. And I just thought that the Rocket Raccoon was the same way, you know, yes, I'm a science experiment and yes, I was horribly treated, but I'm not going to apologize for my life now, and I'm going to live it to the best, you know, to the best of my ability. And I thought that was great. And, you know, to me, you know, when I wake up in the morning, you know, all you hear is a bowl of Rice Krispies as I get out of bed. But I mean, you know, when I roll, you know, when I like, you know, when I step on a mat and, you know, I'm facing down somebody who's 20 years younger than me, and then suddenly they're on the ground screaming and I'm laughing my head off. I'm thinking to myself, yeah, I don't care about the injuries. This is a good day.
You know, there was a really great article on Comics Alliance about this film in which they acknowledged that this movie is basically about a bunch of damaged people. And that's kind of what's – I mean, a lot of Marvel superheroes have damage. But that's kind of these people are kind of dysfunctional, and that's kind of cool, and it brings them together in a neat way, and I don't know, I think it's a very positive movie, and I think it had a lot of really interesting things to say, in addition to being a cool sci-fi flick.
Did anyone get a Dirty Dozen vibe from it?
Well,
kind of says no to me.
They're a band of you know, ex-cons and mercenaries and bounty hunters. One guy described this movie as, okay, imagine Star Wars, except there's all the protagonists are like the bounty hunters from Empire Strikes Back. You know,
and yeah, I can see that.
That, like, that's your movie, and another friend of mine called it. What was that? That sci-fi show on sci-fi series with the one human guy that got
Farscape.
Farscape. One friend of mine called it the Farscape movie that we're never gonna get.
Which is a bummer, because Farscape was a lot of fun.
Okay, yeah. I love Farscape, yeah, sorry.
The poem Watt was mentioning was Self-Pity by D.H. Lawrence.
There we go.
Yeah, you might remember it from Viggo Mortensen recited it in G.I. Jane. I never saw a wild thing feel sorry for itself. I never saw a wild thing sorry for itself. A small bird will drop frozen from a bough without ever having felt sorry for itself.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, you know, you get that from Rocket, you know. He's sitting there, and there's this great meme going around, and you've probably seen the commercial now. Rocket, they're trying to break out of prison, and Rocket brings everybody together as they're sitting down to this table, and he's like, all right, here's what I need. I need you to get this. I need you to get this, and I need you to get this. And then I'm not gonna spoil it, because you know, a couple of guys here haven't seen it, you know, but
you can spoil it. It's all right.
All right. One of the things they ask for is this guy's cybernetic leg, right? So they're going, and you know, the plan has to kick off because, you know, Groot jumps the gun and gets the thing that they should have gotten last. He gets that first, and while nobody's looking, and you know, they're sitting there, and you know, they're Gamora's kicking everybody's ass. Quill is sitting there, you know, blundering through and making things work, and you know, they finally get everything together, and you know, as Rocket's putting everything together, Quill looks at him and says, all right, what do you need me to do with the leg? And he goes, you got that? He goes, cool. He's like, I didn't need it. I just wanted to see if you could get it. You know, so now there's this great meme going around of Rocket side by side with the Winter Soldier. And it says, all right, I'm going to need that guy's arm.
They call back to that joke later on where Rocket has to come up with another plan, and he says, oh, and I'm going to need that guy's eye. This time it's eye. And then Quill's like, no, he doesn't need the eye. He doesn't need the eye. And Rocket's trying to say, oh, yeah, I totally do. And he's like laughing behind his hand. It's hilarious. The beautiful thing about that scene, I thought, was that in any other movie, the hero would like grab the guy's prosthetic leg and just run off with it. But in this movie, everyone else is kicking ass. Groot's like fighting a bunch of these flying robot things, and Gamora's, you know, kicking ass and everything. And Quill has gone into the guy's room and is talking to him and saying, hey, you know what? I really need your leg. Like, he's totally like negotiating about it. He's being like the nice guy about it. And we find out later that when he shows up with a leg, that's because he paid him like $30,000 for the leg, right? And it's a glimpse into how these characters are different than traditional heroic characters, right? Which I thought was good.
Oh, cool, cool. They're already working on a sequel, apparently.
Well, sure. I mean, the movie made $95 million in its
first weekend. $95 million, correct.
Not quite that much. But $95 million in its first weekend.
Well, sadly, Chris McLaughlin could not be with us here today because his wife wanted to go tubing. So we do have Chris's Facebook thoughts on the movie, and he echoes a lot of things we've said about it's a love letter to 70s pop culture and Marvel Comics. He doesn't like the fact that the bad guy is pretty thin. You know, he's evil because he's evil is how he describes him.
Yeah. And that's I've heard that criticism on a couple of places, and I think Marvel has done some great jobs with some villains. Like, I mean, let's face it, Loki, cinematic Loki is far more interesting than comic book Loki has ever been.
Oh, yeah.
Agent of Asgard's pretty good.
Well, yeah, now they just put the movie Loki into the comic. But
yeah, pretty much.
But at the time, you know, Loki was not that, I quite frankly, he's never really been that cool to me. But Hiddleston has just totally made that character, totally sold it. But most Marvel villains aren't, unfortunately, very interesting. And Ronan does not break that mold, I'm afraid.
Oh, that's a, do you agree, Walt?
We were talking earlier about the finishes of how this is like an 80s science fiction movie with a 21st century finish.
Yeah.
And I can agree with that because although I was more interested in the backstory between Gamora and what was her sister's name?
Nebula.
Nebula.
Yeah.
You know, this rivalry sisterhood between those two warriors. I thought that was great. And there's even a scene where Gamora does feel like a sisterly bond at the end with her and is trying to do something to almost bring her back. And just Nebula wants no part of it. And it's just like, no, you've spurned us, you know, for the last time kind of deal, you know. But even though Ronan to me was, you know, just he was almost a MacGuffin in himself. I loved what they did with their voices, both Nebula and it's just this echoey, almost digital effect to their voices, especially Ronan's. When Ronan spoke, even though it was like, oh, I'm evil movie villain, you were captivated by his voice, just by the timbre of it. It was really wild.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think they sounded good. There's a very short bit where Nebula has been not killed, and she sort of puts herself back together. Like her body has been cybernetically altered, and she kind of puts herself back together. That scene is really nice. It lasts like only a couple of seconds, but it's really creepy. It's probably the most unnerving part of the entire movie.
I can't wait to see it. You know, my wife already saw it because she works at Google, and they do cool things with their employees, like opening their books. I have a lending library for comic books at her Google campus.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a thing. But yeah, so it's kind of like a scene because she's like, oh, hey, and this happened. And I'm like, oh, it's cool, honey. Here's Dad. Thank you. I appreciate that. She's like, you know, they killed Groot. I'm like, of course they killed Groot. He's a twig at the end. She goes, how'd you know? I'm like, Groot always dies, and it's always a twig at the end. That's what he does. But where was I going with that? I forgot. Just saying the movie's I guess.
I think it was just general envy.
Yeah, pretty much. Common theme in my life. Could you guys tell that they brought in Joss Whedon to do a punch up?
No.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Could you tell that Joss Whedon was a script doctor on this? I mean, were there certain moments where you're like, oh, hey, that's a Joss Whedon joke?
No, not really.
That's okay.
Unless he did, like, you know, the Footloose stuff, like the jokes about Kevin Bacon and stuff. But other than that, oh, you know what? Well, there's a running joke through the film of people being too literal. It starts off with Dax.
Oh, my God, that was awesome.
Yeah, it was hilarious. Nothing is over my head. My reflexes are too fast. I would kill you. But then, and so you think that it's just like a Dax thing, like that he takes everything literally. But then it happens a couple of other times in the movie, too, like with Nova Prime. That's where the I don't think anybody's 100% dick line comes, and a couple of other of them. So maybe he came back in, and I don't know. There's a few running gags that they're just funny. I mean, the only reason why I think they're Joss is because they're sharp and witty. I mean, other people can do that other than Joss Whedon.
Oh, this is true. This is true. So there wasn't any joke, but there's a pilot of a starship playing with dinosaurs. No? Okay, I just thought I would ask.
In fact, the surest example that it is not a Joss Whedon movie is that none of the protagonists die.
I didn't, except for Groot, who's not really dead.
But, yeah, that's his power. I mean,
kind of like Resurrection Man.
Yeah, well, or the Vision, or any of those artificial characters that you, anybody who can be rebuilt or who regrows, you know, of course you just blow them up every issue. That's what's fun about it.
Hey, the Avenger, Vision is in the Avengers.
I know, it's awesome. He showed up in the poster that it showed at Comic-Con. Yeah, he's a floating figure in the background, and he has a yellow cape and a green outfit, and it's Vision. I mean, it's obviously Vision from the comics.
Yeah, they just wrapped principal photography like this week on Avengers 2.
If someone had told me that they were going to put the Vision and he's going to look like, as I told a friend of mine, this character is more true to the Vision than John Byrne's entire run of West Coast.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, I mean, the Vision never appears as a hero in the Ultimates, which is what the cinematic universe is kind of based on.
I disagree with that. I think it's visually influenced by the Ultimates, but it's thematically and story-wise not at all.
Okay. I can see your argument because it's got a lot more heart than the Ultimates, which Mark Miller's writing is there's not a lot of an emotional core there. So.
Well, Thor looks exactly like the Ultimates version, and yet he is nothing like the Ultimates version.
This is a good point. But Vision in the Ultimates, he showed up twice, and once was just as the harbinger of Galactus.
Yep.
Correct, yes.
I forget the other time he showed up, but it was one of those other kind of one-note show-ups where, you know, no one checked with the editor to see if this character had shown up before. That happens in the Ultimates sometimes. Which is why I was hoping they were going to blow up the universe a few months
ago. My Vision. It was a woman, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was a female Vision who showed up at one
point. Yeah, that was a good series. Just saying that. 5 issues, very, very good.
I'm not saying it was bad. I just I have a love-hate thing with the Ultimates. I loved it back, like, 7 years ago. Not so crazy about it now, although they did some cool things.
Oh, yeah, the first lot stuff was great.
Miles Morales, I enjoy him. I just, when I heard Galactus was coming to Ultimate Earth, I was like, it would be so cool if they blew up Ultimate Earth and had a bunch of heroes escape to our Earth. And all of a sudden, Peter Parker's hanging out with Miles Morales, and the two Nick Furies are playing poker together, and villainous Reed Richards has to come to terms with heroic Reed. I was really looking forward to that. And
how do they do that? How do they wrap that up?
No, go on, because it's the worst thing ever.
it wasn't particularly memorable. I thought it involved Kitty Pryde punching Galactus.
Yes, they made Kitty Pryde really, really big, and they made her punch Galactus into the negative zone, and Ultimate Thor went with him.
Yeah, there was an awful lot of build-up. It was like a really bad climax to a decent action movie. You thought it was really something was going to happen, and the build-up was pretty well done. And all of a sudden, Kitty Pryde is giant, punches him into a portal, and it's over. And various members of the Ultimates are dead, so now Cloak and Dagger and Miles Morales and a few other young heroes are the new Ultimates.
Which won't last very long.
No, it won't. It never does. I was hoping for more of Ultimate Earth is gone, and now these heroes have escaped at the last minute. Doctor Strange showed up and brought them back to our Earth, 616. Well, we have to, you know.
Morales is showing up in the new X-Men series.
Really? Okay, so
yes,
sometime maybe
it's happening. Because I believe they are traveling to Ultimate Universe, or the Morales is coming to ours, and there is a possibility there may be some people coming from the Ultimate Universe during the current Avengers storyline with the colliding universes that's going on at the moment as well.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, I've kind of stopped reading both the big two, like their event books, and I'll just read like one-offs. Like Daredevil is fun because it's Mark Waid writing it, and he's out in San Francisco and has no continuity connections to anything else in the Marvel Universe. Mm-hmm. And Moon Knight by Warren Ellis, issue is like a real quick, you know, action movie, no connections to that's the kind of stuff I'm reading. So I'm not really up to what's going on with the Avengers or.
No, I basically just read the write-ups in the, you know, on the reviews and stuff like that. As if you see my Twitter feed, last month I cancelled 70% of my comics. I dropped $70 worth of comics.
That's a lot of comics you're not paying for anymore.
That's right, gone. And it's just
disappointed that Galactus didn't eat the Earth.
Of course it didn't.
Well, he's tried so many times.
Yeah, but it's a perfect opportunity to actually let him do it.
Yeah, so
exactly.
You want to see Charlie Brown kick the football sometime.
Exactly. And now, you know, that Charlie Brown shirt, that would totally work as a Galactus riff.
Well, it would. It's like Reed Richards is Lucy, and Charlie Brown's Galactus.
Yep. Now I got to see somebody draw that now.
Actually, it's kind of like a Kirby
right
on God's Club design, isn't it?
So. Charlie Brown Galactus, yes.
So, you know, it'd be kind of cool if they did like a DC thing where they talk about, you know, different eras of comics are different, you know, like Charleston Comics is their own multiverse. Like, if they decide 1960s Marvel was its own multiverse, and all of a sudden, like, people drawn like Ditko are showing up in New York.
Yep.
That would, actually, that might be one really fun issue. I don't know if you can get a whole series out of that. But, oh, Multiverse is coming out. That long, simmering Grant Morrison comic.
Yep.
The Multiversity,
book, like,
yep.
Most looking forward to. Yeah.
Also,
yeah.
Known as somebody's next dissertation project.
I cannot wait for it.
Yeah, with Grant Morrison, there's are always so many levels, but, I just saw a very pulpy piece of art with Etrigan as a Green Lantern and Dr. Fate looking a little... he had his helmet on, but he was wielding a gun, like a pulp hero.
Yeah, he's... I don't know if it's called Dr. Fate or Dr. Strange Fate, but apparently he's Doc Savage and Dr. Fate, effectively.
Yeah, they're calling him Doc Fate.
That's right.
That's a great idea. I don't know how they've done that before, but, you know, kind of give the character some... I don't know. Dr. Fate kind of does. He's sort of been like Doctor Strange. I hate to draw the most obvious parallel in the world, but, you know, they both do what Reed Richards usually does when he's not in Fantastic Four, which is show up for 3 or 4 panels to provide, you know, exposition.
Yeah.
It's nice to put a little more oomph into the character where he's actually having adventures that you want to read about.
Yeah.
So, funnily enough, the current Earth 2 version of him, since he's appeared, he's literally been crippled with, like, this weird mental thing going through his head, and so he hasn't actually done anything. So that's been quite strange as well.
That's a bummer. Anyone else reading any fun comics they want to talk about?
Have you seen the new Ragnarok series by Simonson?
I didn't know this was a thing. No, what is this?
It's basically his take on Thor. Where the Ragnarok has happened, but he's survived somehow, and now he's going to kill all the enemies that brought it about. But it's like it's not Marvel Comics Thor. It's based on the actual myth. So big hulking red bearded, you know, the hammer looks stupid like it's supposed to. Giant gloves of, you know, like giant strength and all this other junk.
Yep. But it's Thor.
Yes, it is. It is still Thor.
Ah, that's very interesting. I definitely have to pick that up.
Hey, while we're back on Thor, before the podcast, you said some interesting things about some of the characters in your Green Ronin release, Aid?
Yes.
Don't you have... well, why don't you just tell us, instead of me stealing it, why don't you go ahead and tell us?
the female Thor-type character we have in there is Skald Majer, who's basically the character... the female Thor-like character from the Power Profiles book. There was an illustration, effectively, when Green Ronin gave me the commission and said, if there's any character in there you would like to use, effectively, most of them haven't got any names or any background, go for it. And I thought, I've got the Thor lass. I can't do Scandinavian countries without having her. So that was the first one I focused on. So she's now a fully fleshed-out character that's been made up. And then two of my own characters, one called Manteus, who's a Irish seer, who basically has got set his sights on trying to steal Britannia's superpowers over the last several centuries and failed every single time. And another one is called McRoth, which is basically a champion of Danube, who's kind of like the savior of the earth, who basically does various environmental things as well as fighting supergiants and that kind of thing. So,
oh, cool.
What's and also third edition stats of Britannia and Thomas Reimer as well, which is really cool. So,
oh, that's pretty cool. Thomas Reimer.
Yeah.
Why do I know that name?
Thomas Reimer's their John Constantine.
Yes, that's right. Sorry. I used to be pretty conversant with the Freedom Verse. It's just been a while since I was, playing Eminem regularly or, you know, reading the books. So it's,
Yeah, it's. I'm just chuffed a bit to say there's. I've got concepts in there that I've had in my own campaigns, like going back years and years and years, that I've managed to actually that are now officially part of the third edition Mutants Mastermind universe. It's just astounding to actually see it. So as soon as I opened up the PDF, the character of McGroth, say, is a character I've had for ages, so I actually sent them off a sketch that I did years and years ago and said, okay, this is kind of what it looks like, and open the PDF up, 4 or 5 pages down, and there is the character I've had in my head for so long. It's just so cool. So,
congratulations. That's great news.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, that's great.
Cool, cool. Oh, hey, and we should mention, here at Fan and Go Games, we are still working on Supervillain Handbook, and we'll put the link to the Facebook page, and we're just about halfway done with the archetypes.
We are halfway done, yeah. It's a long project, so some fans will probably get tired of hearing about it, but it's a big book, so it takes time to do. We've got about 20, I posted the 21st archetype today, and we did a great Q&A session with the guys at RPG Now, and we've got a link to that posted on the Facebook page. Maybe we can put that up on the show notes as well, Mike.
Oh, yeah, that just happened the other day with you and Dan Davenport. Okay, I'll put that up there, yeah.
Yeah, it's coming along very well. We're talking with more artists. A lot of the art, about half of the art that we need, Jacob Blackman has already done, and it's wonderful. I can't wait to get it into the book. But Jacob is justifiably a very much in demand young fellow, and a lot of he doesn't have time to do the whole book. I did some talent scouting at the Denver Comic Con about a month ago, and we got some great talent involved, and I'm anxious to start getting some more faces and names up on our art pages.
So yeah, we'll put that link up, and it's going to be a fun project. It's just a long gestating kind of thing.
Yeah, it is. But we're like I say, we're over halfway through with what we're calling the basic edition, which will have all the archetype information. And then once we get rolling with some sort of crowdfunding, then we'll start talking about the expanded edition, which will have 40 actual supervillain NPCs with fully developed backgrounds and personalities and everything. We'll still have stat blocks in the basic edition. You'll still have like a basic set of icons, mechanics that you can add a name and a costume to if you're just looking for some bad guys to go up against your randomly generated heroes for the night. But if you want a more detailed and in-depth set of NPCs that all have kind of, you know, a story and a coherent background that interacts with other characters in the same setting, that'll come out later. I'm writing on the archetypes every day, trying to get one posted every day or two, and it's moving along pretty smoothly. We're on track. We should finish up hopefully by the end of this month. This is the beginning of August. So by the end of August, we should have all the basic edition archetype info done.
So that is chugging along, and we know we're going to do icons versions and super versions. I think everything else is kind of still up in the air. But.
Yeah, I would like to do some, like, I would like to do an M&M edition, and I know that there's an enormously popular Savage World community out there that love that game, and I have played Savage Worlds, and I know that they just came out with a new edition of their superheroes, their superpower supplement. So maybe we can do that too, but at the same time, you know, honestly, the book is designed. The book is very cross system. I mean, all of the stuff that we're writing about how archetypes work and what these villains are used to do and the stories that they tell and the common traits and powers that they have, all of that stuff is not system specific. And icons is such a simple system anyway. I mean, you can put characters in a 3x5 card. If you understand the basics of icons, you don't even need. You don't need me to write you a Savage World version of this book. You know, you can do that on your own. But at the same time, if you don't want to, maybe we'll be able to do something like that.
You know, anything for a price. You know, we are in business here. So.
Yeah, that's true.
I got to pay for those fainting goat snack cakes somehow.
Yeah, but I guess all I'm getting at is that sometimes we can put a lot of work into making, you know, 6 or 8 different versions of a book, which frankly, you know, you don't need if everybody bought the first edition, we'd be okay. But I think people are very loyal to their game system. So like, well, if it's not X system, I'm not going to buy it.
Yeah, I would argue that maybe I don't know. I don't want to use the word tribal because it's a little pretentious in this context. But
I agree, though. I agree. And you know, that's the reality of the market, and that's the world that we're playing in.
I mean, the people who like, say, Heroes system really like Heroes system.
Yeah,
and they really want to see you as a publisher support it. I mean, we were doing Extreme Earth. Heroes wasn't even on our radar. And I'll be honest, I personally don't know anyone who plays Heroes except for John Gibbons himself, the guy behind Extreme Earth.
Uh-huh.
But and hell, I haven't played Heroes myself since like college days. But yeah, we had like 40 people going, "Hey, we want to see a Heroes version of Extreme Earth." And I was like, "Well, twist my arm." And
sure.
It was a huge deal, and I'm glad we supported them. So. Good. Hey, Heroes guys, write me emails. The support is there, we'll definitely do it. Damn, I sound like a used car salesman now. I feel dirty.
Hey, can I just mention that I love the idea of the universe that you're formatting to this book. That is amazing, and I think that everybody should latch onto that. It's a great idea.
Well, you know, I was a little wary of creating a setting which might get which we might not be able to use again in the future for whatever reason. I mean, so let's make something that isn't tied to me or a company or a game system. Let's create something that's universal, and no one can point at you and say, no, you can't use that setting again.
Because it's happened to us before.
Well, I don't want to get – yeah. But so that's the whole idea of making this one sort of public domain. And this had great side effects too, because that means I can use Dracula. And, you know, like, for example, there's a archetype in the villain book which is called the supernatural horror. And the supernatural horror is the villain, which is like a movie monster, like a classic monster, like a vampire or a werewolf or a mummy or a zombie or something like that.
Oh, Universal's rebooting their monsters franchise.
Anyway. Yeah, well, so I had originally sort of created a villain to fit the supernatural horror archetype. But now, you know, screw that. I'm just going to use Dracula. And, you know, I get to put out a book with Dracula in it. I mean, how fun is that, right?
That is super fun.
Yeah, it is super fun. So, and I get to have him in the same setting as all of my other heroes and villains. So there's some great side effects to public domain.
Yeah, and it's public domain. All the art's going to be public domain. And like you say, I mean, if we're all playing some different superheroes game in 5 years, we can still use the universe because, you know, it's...
Exactly. And if we do 6 or 8 different rule system versions for this, the universe can exist in all of them at the same time.
Okay. Well, yeah. That reminds me, oh, God, who was the author of Sherlock Holmes?
Doyle.
Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Yeah, his estate is trying to take Sherlock Holmes out of the public domain.
Yeah,
in the UK, it's not in public domain.
Really? So, like, when they made Sherlock on the BBC, they had to get the estate's approval?
I believe so. I could be completely wrong about this, but I believe that nothing in Arthur Conan Doyle is public domain in the UK. I could be completely wrong about that.
It's actually split. Like, everything up to the final problem is public domain, but everything after the final problem is not.
Interesting.
So you can talk about Watson, but you can't talk about his second wife.
Gotcha.
Okay. Well, it's kind of like Superman and the estates of the creators, where you like Superman at the point of creation might be public domain, might have some claim to those rights soon, but Lex Luthor and Lois Lane and any characters came along later, not so much.
Well, and this also, by the way, the Kirby estate is going like all the way to the Supreme Court to get copyright back on a bunch of the characters that Kirby created. And very high-profile, high-ticket lawyers have signed on to that case and have written long legal briefs defending the Kirby estate's claims. We're in a very interesting time now because the desire to keep money-making intellectual properties out of public domain has been going on so long that, like a rubber band, it's just become stretched, just about to its breaking point. You know, under the original rules for public domain, Mickey Mouse would be public domain for decades now. But Disney refuses to allow that to happen. And so they've been fighting this in the courts, and they've been succeeding. And they've been getting that public domain cutoff extended and extended and extended. But now, partly because of this idea that information should be free, the whole change in the way that we perceive information because of the internet, like we think that everything should be free. Like, people make music, people make movies. Well, all that stuff should be free. It's a weird idea. And what it's done is it's really influenced this perception of copyright law. And you're getting renewed pressure to make some of these things public domain. And the Sherlock Holmes case is a great test case. And it's on appeal right now, by the way. So it'll be interesting to see how it falls out.
Yeah, I guess that kind of puts the onus on content providers to create interesting content, because it's not going to be good enough to just say you're making Batman comics. You have to make a good Batman comic.
Exactly. If I can use probably what's a really bad analogy, but it's not unlike what's going on in the MMO field right now. I don't know if you guys remember, but like, you know, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, every game, every MMO in the world had a subscription. You had to pay $10 a month or $15 a month or whatever to play your World of Warcraft.
But now, City of Heroes. Go ahead.
Yeah, City of Heroes, there you go. But over the last few years, that's changed, and now almost no game has a subscription. And the whole philosophy has changed. Now it's not, well, we're going to charge you every month to let you play. Now it's instead, we have to make a game so good that you want to spend money on it, that you want to give us money, right? And, of course, it's a lot more complicated than that. But the same thing is kind of happening with what you're talking about, the entertainment creation. You know, somebody makes an album, and the album is going to be pirated for free anyway. So you may as well just release it for free and make it so good that people want to give you a dollar for it.
Or enough of your core fan base will want to give you whatever for it.
Yes, and that's a good point, too. This, what happens is it gets driven by a small minority of high-ticket donors.
Well, I mean, also, you can't be a dick to your fans unless you have an odd relationship with your fans, in which that's how you relate to them. But, I mean, there's certain publishers I know of who their shit gets pirated as soon as it's released.
Yep.
And, you know, they survive or don't because enough fans like their stuff to opt to pay for it when they could get it for free without much trouble.
That's right. Yeah.
So, anywho, I have to wrap things up, guys. It's getting late in the day here. Any closing thoughts on Guardians of the Galaxy or anything else? Walt, Jason, Aide.
I'm going to say I am Groot.
I am Groot.
I am Spartacus.
Thanks for inviting us, Mike.
It is always a pleasure. Aide, any thoughts from you?
Nope. Just to say, so everybody knows, I love the Guardians comics, so I'm not just going to not see it because of that. There are other reasons.
Oh, okay. Oh, this reminds me. I should put this link in show notes, too. I probably mentioned it a few times because I have a huge ego and I'm kind of a jerk about this kind of thing. I was a writer on Margaret Weiss Productions' Annihilation event. My stuff was in some of the books that didn't get published because Marvel came in like a Death Star and yanked the license back.
Yeah.
However, there's a thread right now on RPG.net where some of the guys who wrote the Guardians of the Galaxy and a few other characters have put those data files up.
Oh, no kidding.
Free on RPG.net. Yeah, I'll put the link up in the show notes. So, yeah, it's on page one of the forums on RPG.net right now.
Okay.
So if you're a Marvel heroic role-playing fan, or if you're just like the Guardians of the Galaxy, you want to see Groot set it up in a few different ways. I'm looking at it right now. Someone's put the Phalanx up there.
Cool.
Well, that kind of makes me wish I was playing MHR, because that was a fun game. But anyway, so something to check out. And folks, thanks for listening, and we will catch you next time on the BAMF Podcast.